When you fly around the country as much as I do, there has to be some sort of perks in it for the kids. I'm already looking at butterfly nets and magnifying glasses. So, all right. Well, I am thrilled to see. So how many of you guys are really, truly newbies, like 1 to 3 years homeschooling? Oh, my goodness. We should be passing out barf bags. That's what I wish I had when I was a new homeschooler. Okay, real quickly, does anybody have an empty seat next to you? If you do, raise your hand. Okay, everybody back there, if you see someone with their hand raised, they have an empty chair next to them and they want to be your friend. Keep your hands raised if you have an empty seat next to you. Empty seats, empty seats. Their mom's coming in, they want to sit down. They need, it's either they sit down or we pass out barf bags. So keep your hands up. Yay! Anybody else need to find a seat? Okay, a few brave women who are just going to stand in the back. Okay. All right, so for those of you who haven't heard me speak yet, that's me. You can find me online. I'm really easy to track down. I spend most of my time on Facebook at The Busy Mom, and you'll have to search for it just like you see it there. I'm also on Instagram, so the picture I just took of you is probably going to end up on Instagram. You can show it to your kids. There I am, right there. We have a Bible study, a Bible devotional for families, along with the 2 books I've written on marriage, The Busy Mom's Guide to Daylight. Is all of the questions that I often get. You guys, raise your hand again if you have a seat. There's some people. Okay, everybody that has their hand raised, beautiful woman in the pink shirt, everyone that has their hand raised, you can sit anywhere. All right. Boy, we should scoot in next time, and then people won't keep. There she goes. Thank you guys so much. The Guide to Daylight is most of the questions that people ask me about homeschooling specifically, like how do I get everything done in a day? And what kind of schedules do we use and that kind of thing. And I'm going to give you tons of practical information. And there's even more in the Guide to Daylight. And I wrote it because I wanted to talk about surrender. Because I think more than anything else, as you start off the homeschool journey, the best thing that you can do is learn how to surrender. So not looking to see what everybody else is doing in homeschooling, but just going, okay, what is it going to look like for my family? And there's freedom in it, all right? Firmly Planted is the Bible devotional that we've written, and I'm trying to encourage people to go to thebusymom.com/project because we need people to help us get the books 3 and 4 printed for families. And so that's a project that we are working on at Indiegogo right now, all right? Some of you haven't seen my family yet, and those are my people, a whole bunch of them. And this is my grandson, Noah. And he calls me Mamsie. Well, he doesn't call me anything yet, but he will call me Mamsie. All right, so I want to introduce you to the homeschool year at a glance. So get ready. All right, so what month are we in right now? Oh, yeah. Yep, that looks about right. So you'll notice that by May, that's why the homeschool conference season is moving up and up and up. It used to be that conference season started in June and ended in August, but the homeschool moms were like, no way, man, I'm not doing anything related to school in June, July, or August. So they started moving it up to March where everybody's kind of like that. So March, April, and May are the really busy months for me because my family and I travel and I speak to homeschoolers. So and it's good because by May, everybody's kind of done. So June, you're feeling pretty good. July, you're like, yeah, bring it. I got nothing to do right now except for the normal stuff that moms do to make people crazy. All right, August, you're feeling pretty good. September, you're like, I have got this thing. My lesson plans are done, right? My master calendar's on the wall. I picked out my curriculum. By October, you're waving the white flag. November, you're like, I don't know what I got myself into. In December, you're like, Christmas, schmishmas. January, feeling pretty good because you gave yourself a break. You probably took the whole month off. And then February, you're just like, okay, here we go again. And then March, you start to shrink, and then it kind of starts all over again. I think that really is, this is another one of Todd Wilson's cartoons. He, by the way, is a native Indianer. What do you guys call yourselves? Oh, Lordy. I got some stuff to learn. I am a Washingtonian, okay? It's not that hard. It goes with the state. Okay. Or actually, I was born in Oregon, and that is how you say it, just Oregon. Someone said Oregon. I'm like, no one does that. All right, so, but Todd Wilson is from here, so if you ever get an opportunity to support a local guy, he's your guy, all right? I want to talk to you really quickly about what education is, because if you don't know what it is, all the curriculum that you find out there in the exhibit hall is going to run you over and leave you for dead on the road, okay? You need to know what education is. You should write this down. Education is discipleship. That's all it is. So breathe in, breathe out. You guys have had babies. Breathe in, breathe out. Education is discipleship. The Bible says that when a student is fully trained, he'll be like his teacher. And so when your children are being educated, whether they're being educated by you or by someone in the school system, they are being discipled. I think that the most powerful verse for homeschooling is found in Luke 6:40. When a student is fully trained, he'll be like his teacher. Some of you are bringing kids home from regular school right now. They've either been in private school or they are in public school. And so I want to talk to you for just a minute about what it looks like to bring your kids home from school. All right, don't panic. That's kind of the first thing. And remember that homeschool is not like traditional school. If you want to know the truth, not like I would lie to you, but since you want to know the truth, I'll tell you the truth. Most of the time, the people that I meet that have the hardest time homeschooling are professional teachers. They're trained teachers. Some of you are nodding. And I think that's because teachers are experts in crowd control. And actually, mothers are experts in crowd control. We're really not that different. But I think what they're learning in school is making it so difficult to homeschool that a lot of times they're frustrated by the way that they're doing, because it's different. Homeschooling is not like traditional school. All right. It takes time to adjust. I can guarantee you that when you start homeschooling, you're going to make mistakes. You're going to try things that don't work for you. You're going to buy a curriculum that frustrates you. This is just the truth. Don't quit yet. But this is the truth. You need to take time to adjust. And while you're doing that, remember the golden rule of homeschooling is that child training comes first. If you have a disrespectful, disobedient child, you're going to have a really hard time homeschooling them. I meet moms all the time, especially in the grocery store, who say, oh, you know, because they'll see me there in the middle of the day. That's what homeschoolers do, by the way. We go to the zoo at like 10 o'clock in the morning on a Wednesday because no one will be there. We hate to go to the mall on the weekends because everyone's there. We're used to like going places when it's not crowded. Yeah. And so I'll take my kids to the grocery store, and inevitably someone will say, kids, do you not have school today? And my kids will go, no, we don't. We're homeschooled. And I'm just like, be quiet. Of course we have school. We're on a field trip to that grocery store. And then inevitably they'll say, oh, I don't have the patience for, oh, the patience of Job. You must be an amazing woman. And I say, and my kids will say, no, she's not. Because it's true, right? Listen, it doesn't require extraordinary amounts of patience to teach your children. Well, no, that's true. It does. It doesn't require the patience of Job. What it requires is perseverance. And anyone who's been homeschooling for any amount of time will tell you that. It is not about patience. There's nothing different about me than about any of you guys. And if the Lord's called you to homeschool your kids, he's going to give you everything you need to do it. And so that's the last thing in bringing your kids home or beginning homeschooling is learning to trust the Lord. It's a difficult thing to do. I won't lie to you. Because what you're going to want to do is follow Susie Homemaker over here, and whatever she did in school, you're going to want to do the exact same thing. But here's the problem with that. You don't have the exact same children. And you don't have the exact same family. And you don't have the exact same personality. And so you need to start going, okay, what will work for my kids? And I'm going to talk to you. I actually have 28 slides to go through, so I'm going to start talking kind of fast because I have a lot of stuff to tell you. But I really want to encourage you, when you start, don't let what's happening in the exhibit hall overwhelm you, okay? Relax. Just chill out. I had a mom already come to my booth this morning, and she's like, I don't know, I think I failed my kid. He's not reading. And I'm thinking her kid's, you know, 16, and he was 4. So here's the thing. If your kids are 3, okay, well, let's do this. Let's hypothetically. Let's say that you have a 3-year-old or a 4-year-old. I'm going to tell you how to do school with them. Or a 2-year-old, 2, 3, 4, maybe even 5. Here's what you do. You go outside, you're following me, go outside in your backyard and find the biggest rock that you can move and push it over. And whatever crawls out from underneath it, Google it. You're done. Okay? Don't make it hard. I think so oftentimes we put so much on ourselves as parents, and we ruin and we steal the natural instinct and curiosity of our children by having them sit down and making them cry over letters and numbers when they're 2, 3, 4, 5 years old. And I have lots of valid reasons for that. And I'm teaching a little bit more tomorrow, and I'll tell you a little bit more then. But the main thing I think with your kids, especially when they're little, when they watch you, they need to see you spending time in God's word. They need to see you nurturing your marriage. And they need to see that you value your relationship with them over academics. I think that's one of the things that homeschoolers get sucked into really easily. There are lots of different options for homeschoolers now, and I think we're feeling a lot of pressure from the world to educate our kids a particular way. And you want to remember that academics are always second to relationship with your kids. So keep those relationships strong. Next is catch a vision. That means know why you're homeschooling. If you don't know why you're homeschooling, when it gets difficult, and it will, you're going to quit, or you're going to want to quit. And I think that if we know why we're homeschooling, if we have a vision for homeschooling, and we know we're not just doing it to follow some God's good idea for someone else's family, that's what keeps us strong, is knowing why we're homeschooling. There's a couple of ways to do that, but I think the biggest thing is to find support. You can find that right here at the convention. Find out what your local support groups are. It's important for you to have people that understand what you're doing and understand what you're going through so that you've got somebody to talk you down out of a tree, all right? Someone asked me earlier about my slides, and I don't have them available in a printout for you, but I am not opposed at all to you taking pictures of slides. So when they get, if your cameras will do it. So when there's too much on a slide for you to write down, feel free to take a picture of it. All right. Here's the next thing is have confidence. People ask me all the time, what makes a good teacher? What is going to make a good teacher? Here's the first thing. It's a passion for your student. It's a passion to really see your child learn and grow and excel at something. The next thing is love. The next thing is courage. You're going to need a lot of it in the years to come. And then finally is determination. These are really the four components of a good teacher. And if you're a mother or a dad, you already have those four components. And I'm here to tell you, I've been homeschooling for a very long time. Two of our kids have gone to college, and one of them is now a mom herself. And these four things are what helped us to succeed in homeschooling. It had less to do, at the end of the day, I realized, about the curriculum that we chose, and more to do about the pouring in of our lives into our children that gave them the confidence that they needed to pursue the call that God has on each of their lives. All right, I want to talk for just a few minutes about learning styles. These are a few things that I wished I had known when I first started homeschooling. I kind of made a list of all the things that I really wish that I would have known. That I feel like I wouldn't say that I failed at it, but if I could go back and do it again, I would definitely do things differently. I would learn the three main learning styles, and here they are. They're visual, and I'm going to break these down for you in a second. Auditory and kinesthetic. And I have to tell you, I did not believe in such a thing as kinesthetic learners. Because when I was in school, the kid who was fidgeting all the time and the kid who was, you know, popping their gum or couldn't sit still, where'd that kid always end up? Down in the office, right? That kid ended up in the office. So when I had a fidgeting kid, I didn't have an office to send him to. And I was like, stop it. You're not listening. You're bugging me. Because I am very much a visual learner. And you will notice as you begin teaching your children that those learning styles are going to start to surface. So I want to give you a few clues as to how you can kind of help determine the learning style of your child. If you have a kinesthetic or a tactile learner, that means that child has to always be doing something with their hands. So in other words, whenever I'm speaking at conferences, I can always tell the women who are tactile learners. They're the ones that come and they can't stop crocheting. They learn the best by just doing something. You know, when they're listening to me, they're absorbing information when their hands are moving. Sometimes you have a kid who just cannot sit still. He needs to bounce or he needs to be moving with his hands. When our son Skyler, who is now 17, when he was 7, I had him, in the morning we were reading history together as a family, which we often do, as I'm a huge fan of unit studies. And when we were reading history, at the end, I told the kids, all right, kids, because I had a couple of high schoolers by then, I said, all right, here's what I want you to do. I want you to talk about Thomas Jefferson and write a couple of paragraphs on Thomas Jefferson and just give it to me by Friday. And my older girls are like, no problem, kind of wrote it down. And my son, Skyler, I went over to the table to kind of help him, sort of give him a jump start. And this is exactly what he did. I'm not kidding. So when your kid does this to you, you can go, oh, Heidi's kid did that to her too, okay? So I sat down next to him. I said, okay, Skyler, where are we going to start? And he went, I can't do it. My hand hurts when I write. I was like, really? Because I am on to you, buddy. Like, I've watched you, and your hand doesn't hurt when you write. He's like, yes, it does. And over and over, so I finally called my husband, and I was like, you know, Jay, I'm gonna die. I can't do this anymore. This kid is crying. By the time he was done, you know, Skyler was done with me. Jay, I was crying, and Skyler was crying. So I called my husband, and then I'm pretty sure by the time I was done with him, he was crying. I don't know for sure, but he's like, Heidi, what are you trying to do? And I said, I want him to write about Thomas Jefferson. And he said, I know, but what are you trying to do? Are you, is it matter to you that he's, that it's Thomas Jefferson? Or would you, are you trying to get him to learn to write? And I said, well, I'm trying to get him to learn to write. And he said, well, then why does he need to write about Thomas Jefferson? Can't he just write about what's interesting to him? Well, it never occurred to me. So I said, okay, I'll go back and I'll try it again. So I went back and I said, Skylar, and he's still crying at the table. And I said, Skylar, we're going to try a different approach. What do you like? What do you like to do? Well, he's a 7 or 8 year old boy. What do you think the first thing he said was? Yes, he liked Legos. He likes Legos. I said, well, how about we write about Legos? And he opened one eye and he was like, I mean, I think he thought I was tricking him. And so he's like, well, really? And I said, yeah. I said, what if I just, because you know what? He's got plenty of time to learn about Thomas Jefferson, but I wanted him to learn how to write. And I was just thinking, oh, he'll learn about Thomas Jefferson because that's what we're reading about, right? That made the most sense. But he didn't care. Like right now he knows how important Thomas Jefferson is, but he's 17. This was a long time ago. So I went downstairs and we Googled the history of Legos, and it was fascinating. And do you know that by Friday that kid turned in a 2-page report to me, complete with pictures and drawings and the name of the guy from some foreign country who came up with the idea in the first place. And he liked it because you know what? He was invested in the subject. Find out how your kids learn, and then don't be careful what hills you die on. The other thing I found out about Skylar was that he's a kinesthetic learner. Skylar always wanted to be doing something with his hands, and it bothered me. I felt like he was being disrespectful, that he wasn't listening, that he was disobeying me, and we had lots of tug-of-wars about this until my friend suggested to me that he might be a tactile or a kinesthetic learner, and I said, that is a bunch of baloney. That is a kid who just needs to be disciplined, and if he just had more self-control, we would get along just fine, right? Some of you have kids like that. But after I got to thinking about what she said to me, I thought maybe it would not be a bad idea for me just to experiment with him. So I gave him Legos, little pile of Legos, while I read history and science and did some other things with all the kids. And I said, Skylar, I'll tell you what, while I'm reading today, you can play with your Legos as long as you're quiet. You can build and just sit here and listen. I mean, that kid, it was like he won the school lottery. His eyes lit up like a Christmas tree. He was like, really? You're going to let me play Legos while we do school? And then, of course, my teenage girls were like, well, can we get on our cell phones and text? And no. So I let him play with Legos. And at the end, I asked a series of questions, and he got every single one of them right. There's something about him working with his hands that helps the information go from here to here. And that, if you have a kinesthetic learner, look for those kinds of things. Do they seem like they're doing better? Do they listen better when they're fidgeting with something, or they have like putty in their hand or something like that, all right? A visual learner, these are pretty obvious. They speak for themselves. A visual learner is going to be the person who wants to read the story to you. They're going to be the one who wants to read out loud. They're the one who needs to see the words or see the pictures. They are going to be stimulated more by images than anything else. The auditory learner is the person who wants to hear the story being read to them. They're going to be frustrated by having to read out loud to you. And we have with 7 kids, we have quite a mixture of learning styles in our home. And so it's worked out pretty good so far. Our oldest daughters are obviously, they're grown and gone now. But when they were still doing school, Sierra really loved to read, and Savannah really loved to listen. So it worked out really good. I'm a visual learner because you have to pry the book away from me. They'll read to me and I have to see it. Like, I want to read it. You know, same with a math problem. The kids will say, Mom, that isn't it. And I'll be like, oh, my head just exploded. Like, I have to be able to see it. So pay attention to how your kids are processing information. These are 2 of my favorite books on learning styles, which can be found on Amazon. Discover Your Child's Learning Style is probably one of my favorites, but this is my all-time favorite. It's by Cynthia Tobias, and it's called The Way They Learn. And by the way, if you go to HeidiStJohn.com/blog, you will find a list of these. If you go through the Amazon link there, it's an affiliate for me and it helps support our ministry. So when you buy stuff through Amazon, it really helps me, but I also have suggestions up there too. But these are 2 of my favorite ones. The reason I like The Way They Learn is because she tells about learning styles in a little bit more of story format. So it's not overwhelming and you can kind of pick out characteristics that your child might have. All right. Choosing curriculum. This is huge. There are basically three questions that you want to ask yourself when you choose curriculum. Here's the first one. Does it overwhelm me? So in other words, it doesn't matter how fancy the talk is of the person at the booth. If when you look at that curriculum inside, your heart is racing, that's not for you. All right? Some of you are going, thank the Lord, I feel so much better already. So listen, when you take your time, all right, take your time. Find out what resonates with you. What I have learned is that for me as a mom, the curriculum needs to fit my learning style. If it doesn't resonate with me, I'm not going to teach it very well because it's going to frustrate me. So in other words, when I purchase something to teach my children, I'm thinking, can I teach this? Is this something I'm going to look forward to doing with my kids every day? I'm such a visual person. I'm the one who likes to do the reading. So things like literature approaches to education and Charlotte Mason, those kinds of things really resonate with me because they're hands-on and they're less textbook oriented. And I love that because I can read to my kids. When I first started homeschooling, I spent so much money on curriculum that we no longer use that I could make a small room out of it. So I really want to encourage you, find out what your own learning style is. You can actually go online and take learning style tests for yourself. So you might want to just Google it. Just Google a learning style assessment. And lots and lots and lots of options will come up. And you can kind of find out. Some of you already know what your bent is. But if you're not sure, take a learning style test. All right. And the next question is, am I choosing it out of fear? I think this happens more often than we like to admit. We choose something because we're afraid that if we do it a different way, it may not work out for us. And so the Bible says that you weren't given a spirit of fear, but power and love and a sound mind. And I really want to encourage you. So often, it's the simple things that work the best. It's simple. I was talking to a mom today, and she's just starting out, and she's got a whole bunch of little ones at home. And I said, really, all you need to be doing with your fifth grader or your five-year-old and your seven-year-old is math, a little bit of math, and some reading. Math and reading, those are the big things right now. While you're still trying to figure this out, it will come. If you've got a child who is chomping at the bit to do it, dude, strike while the iron is hot. Go with the flow. But if you've got a child who's giving you grief and you're frustrated with that child and you've got a whole bunch of little ones, go slow. All right. There's a ton of information on learning styles and choosing curriculum for your kids. And the things I'm reading more recently have really come in line with what I have found in my own experience with my own children. And that is when I wait until they're ready, it's just like potty training. When I wait until they're ready, a light bulb goes on and it clicks and we're moving. But if I'm pushing, 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 and they're crying and I'm crying, dude, you should just stop it right now. Just stop before you start. Take a hint from me who spent many, many, many hours around the kitchen table crying with my children. You don't need to do that, okay? So remember this about curriculum. It doesn't have to be expensive. It doesn't have to be expensive. It might not work. And if it doesn't work, shelve it. Don't keep trying. Remember, I talked about that this morning. You wouldn't put a shoe on your child that didn't fit your child and then force them to wear it until the end of the school year. If it doesn't fit, shelve it, all right? And your curriculum is the assistant. You are the educator. And some of the main arguments against homeschooling in the past have been, well, what if you don't have a teaching degree? And you've already heard me talk about that. Or what if you buy something that is so teacher intensive that you don't have time for it? That goes back to, does it overwhelm me? If you're not a person who is inclined to make lesson plans, then don't get a curriculum that's going to force you into making lesson plans. Do something that you know that you at least have a shot at doing well, all right? And then remember this about curriculum. Curriculum is not the main thing. It's really not. The main thing is that you teach your children. You want to foster within your children a love of learning. If I could go back and do it again, there are so many things that I would do differently. But the main things I would have stressed a whole lot less about all of this formal education. There are basically two styles of education in this country. The first style is a Greek method of education. And the second one is a Jewish method or a Hebrew method of education. And you guys have been studying for a while, right? The Greeks esteemed knowledge. That was their big thing. Knowledge was king. The Bible says that knowledge does what? Knowledge puffs up. That's what the Bible says. Have you ever met somebody who had a lot of knowledge and no wisdom? It's kind of a bummer. The other style of education that we see most often in this country is a Hebrew style of education, which has more to do with apprenticeship and a coming alongside. And I'm interested. To me, this is an interesting discussion to have because I think that there are good things in both a Greek style of education and in a Hebrew style. But it's interesting to see how Jesus was taught in the Bible, that he came alongside his father who taught him to be a carpenter's apprentice. It had more to do with relationship and less to do with academics. And the more I see in the homeschool movement, and this was true, you guys, 25 years ago when homeschooling wasn't nearly as prevalent as it is now, and they did not have access to what you have access to, those homeschool moms did every bit as good a job with not very much because they were on their knees before the Lord all the time asking him for assistance and asking the Lord for help. I'm not down on educating your kids, obviously. My kids went to college. They did great on their SATs. They did awesome. I'm just saying, I think they would have done just as awesome if I had not been freaked out when they were little. And I think it would have been a whole lot less stressful. If you have really young ones, I would love to suggest that you look up a program called Five in a Row if you're interested in unit studies. I don't think I have that in here. No, I don't. There's a couple of different styles of education you're going to hear about. You're going to hear classical. You're going to hear that word a lot. You know, that's teaching the rhetoric and Greek and Latin and stuff like that. That's more of the Greek system of education. You're going to hear about Charlotte Mason, which is more of a holistic approach, more of a child, what they call delight-directed learning. And in our years of homeschooling, I would say that we started out with a more of a classical approach, and then we gravitated eventually because I could see that it was hurting my relationships with my kids and stressing me out. Some people they do awesome with that. I didn't. I did it because I felt like my kids were going to fail and not get into Harvard if I didn't do that. But when I started, I realized it wasn't the right thing for our family. I ended up doing more of a Charlotte Mason approach with our kids, and that was more delight-directed. In other words, you find out as your kids get older, what are they naturally gifted at? So, for example, our daughter Sierra is a very gifted graphic designer. In fact, that's what she does for a living now. She does graphic arts, and she does photography for a living. So as I'm watching them grow, we're giving them opportunities to stretch and grow in the areas where they're naturally gifted. When you guys go to college, what you get to choose your major, right? No one chooses it for you. You choose your major based on what you're interested in. And so I would like to encourage you, watch and see what your children are good at. Their gifts are going to start to bubble to the surface, and you're going to start to see, oh, this child is good at this, and this child is good at that. I have a very dear friend in Vancouver whose son knew from the time he was 10 years old that he wanted to be an emergency room physician. And so this mom took it and ran with it. I mean, this kid was interested in anatomy. He was interested in the sciences. He started going to Running Start when he was 14 years old. He graduated when he was 16, and he is now 20. I think he's 20 or 21, and he just got approved and is in medical school in Chicago. He's going to be an emergency room physician. He's known it for a really long time. I would submit to you that is very rare. It's very rare, and it hasn't happened with any of her other kids. When I first met her, I was like, I'm sorry. Like, she told me what her kid was doing, and I all of a sudden, I just felt like, you know, out of an episode of Beavis and Butthead. I was just like, well, I just shouldn't even be talking to you anymore because, hey, kids, come and show Mrs. Estes how far you can spit a watermelon seed, you know? I mean, I just felt so dumb all of a sudden because here her kid is in this pre-med program, and he already knows what he wants to do, but not all of her kids are like that. And some of you are going to maybe have a kid like that, and some of you will never have a kid like that. But the thing that she did right was in each one of her kids, she's watching to see what they start talking about. Have the conversation with your children. What's interesting to you? Like if you want to study a science with your child, and we've done this for years with our kids, I love Apologia has the Young Explorer series. It's fantastic. And I would look at those books. I think one of them's on human anatomy, one of them's astronomy, botany, all these things. And I would look at them with my kids and I would say, what's interesting to you? And let them choose. Let them choose what's interesting. If they want to study the planets, they're going to be a lot more excited about it than if you say, we're going to study botany, and they really are interested. I mean, strike while the iron's hot. That's one of the really fantastic things about homeschooling. Another thing that I would really encourage you to do is to read aloud with your children. I cannot stress this enough. Read aloud. Take your kids to the library. One of the things that you have an opportunity to do as homeschooling parents is to bring your kids aside and spend quality time with them reading. When our oldest daughter graduated from high school, the following Mother's Day, she gave me a picture of that Don Richardson wrote. Don Richardson's the author of a book called Peace Child. And it's excellent. If you're looking for good missionary stories, by the way, go over to the YWAM booth and tell them Heidi sent you. They're fantastic. We've been reading their books for 15 years with our kids. And when Savannah graduated and came back that Mother's Day, she said to me, "Mom, of all the things that we did in school, the thing that made the most impact on me was just sitting around in the morning reading." And there were a couple of years that I got sucked back into, you know, I'm not doing enough, and we're frantic, and we're trying to do all these things, and it literally sucked the life out of our family. I brought my kids home from school because I wanted to do something different. And I think I wrote a blog post about a year ago called Homeschooling Held Hostage. You should write that down and Google it. It's called Homeschooling Held Hostage. It's about what happens when we choose to bring our children home from school because we want to do something different, only to get hijacked by the expectations of the world. And I think we make it so much harder than it has to be. And for Savannah to say that the thing she loved most about school was learning how these other people follow Jesus. And so I took a missionary story, and I basically made it into a unit study. So, for example, when we studied Corrie Ten Boom and her life, her story is The Hiding Place. But when we studied Corrie Ten Boom, we studied Nazi Germany. We studied Hitler. We learned about racism. We studied Europe. We got maps out. The kids were so into this story because I learned something. See, you guys, lucky you, you're going to learn from all my mistakes. I learned something. It took me 10 years to figure this out. If you can connect your children emotionally to a story, they'll remember what you're teaching them. If you can connect their emotions to a story, they're going to remember. So my kids could tell you right now where Papua New Guinea is on a map and where Colombia is on a map because we finished Bruchko, and now we're reading Peace Child. When we read about these people, we study the areas where they're from and the indigenous people. It's a fantastic opportunity to not only change and impact their life by reading a story to them that actually matters, but you get an opportunity to study everything that you, all of a sudden, everything that you're learning about and reading about becomes an opportunity to learn something. And that's how you sort of whet their appetite so that they're interested in learning and they're interested in finding things out. One of the things that we love to see happening in our children as they get older is they learn how to find information out for themselves. And when Savannah went to college, I had the opportunity to talk to one of her professors after her first semester there. I met with him because I thought, well, I felt like this was the ultimate test for me. You know, is my kid going to survive in a college environment, or are they going to eat her alive like my mother told me that they would? And she did great. She was one of the top students in her class, and he said that he knew immediately that she was homeschooled. And I was like, that's not good. You know, like, oh, you know, I could just see him going, homeschooler, you know. But he said the reason he knew that she was homeschooled was because she was engaged right from the beginning. She got to choose the class that she was in, and she was interested in it. So she asked questions. She formed study groups. She's my visual learner. So I had her draw out the things that we were learning about. So she would make comic strips. So if she wanted to memorize something, she might draw a picture for it and a symbol. That's what she did in her study groups in college, and the professor liked it so much that he adopted it and uses it for his class. So it was just neat to see me, this little homeschool mom, get a couple of kids off to college and go, you know what, maybe I didn't have to worry so much. Maybe I didn't have to stress my kids out so much. And that's really important. So I want to end with a couple of just frequently asked questions that people talk about all the time. People are going to think that you're crazy. And sometimes you're going to feel crazy, and that's okay. I want to just encourage you, don't try to prove yourself to anybody. I said it this morning. In case you missed it, I'll say it again. Fruit takes time to grow. No one ever plants an apple tree and expects fruit 6 months later, and they don't make fun of the tree tender. They just go, oh, your tree's looking very nice. That's a nice budding little apple tree you've got. Look at that, those nice little leaves. They don't go, where's the fruit? Why can't your apple tree bear fruit? When is it going to show some fruit? How much water are you giving your apple tree? They don't, but they'll do that to your kids. And I want to encourage you as homeschooling parents, don't let people do that to your kids. A, your kids will not like you for it. They won't. And B, You need to keep reminding yourself that fruit takes time to grow. No one in my family makes fun of us anymore because they're watching my two grown daughters who are now in their early 20s walking with the Lord and doing just fine in normal, what my mother called normal society. My kids are doing just fine. And now no one, you know, they don't get grilled over Thanksgiving dinner anymore. They don't. But for many years they did. And I let people do that to my kids. That's one of the things I wished I hadn't done. I wished I hadn't felt so pressured for my kids to perform. It's okay for you guys to shelter your kids. It really is. That's your job as parents. You know, we shelter tomato plants in this country, and no one says, I can't believe you're not subjecting that plant to the wind and the rain. Well, we're not doing that because it's not ready for the wind and the rain. So your job as parents is to determine when your child is ready for the weather, all right? So fruit takes time to grow. Avoid comparing yourself with other people. I know I've said this before, but I'm telling you, of all of the things I see homeschool parents struggle with, this one's the biggest. Because we look at other people, like my friend whose son wanted to be an emergency room physician. Not only was he brilliant, he was ridiculously good looking and he could play football. I was just like, oh my word, you won the genetic lottery. And then I look over at my kids and go, I wonder if they're going to get into college, you know? And we do that to each other. Avoid the comparison trap. Be real with other people. All right, don't try to be super homeschool mom because she doesn't exist. She doesn't exist anyway. And if you, you know, could follow me around my house on any given day, I'm sure you'd never want to hear me speak again because I'm just like you. And we all have struggles. So be real with other moms. Be real enough to say, you know what, I need a vacation. Can we swap? Can we do this? Can we do that? Talk to your husband. Keep it on the front burner about being real, not on the back burner. All right, the myth of socialization. I don't really have anything to say about this because it's so dumb. When people ask me about socialization now, I just go, that is a very good question. Why do you have your child in that school? I would be so concerned about socialization if I were you. I say you just turn it right back around. Because socialization for homeschoolers in this day and age is a nothing. When people ask me about that, it's all I can do to not laugh. Because if we did everything that was available to us as homeschoolers, we literally would never be home. So your kids are going to do just fine, and that's all I have to say about that. All right, get out of the box, but not too fast because you might trip. What I mean by this is you want to make your homeschool your homeschool. And the first question that I want you to ask yourself is, what do I want my kids to remember about homeschooling? What do I want my kids to remember about homeschooling? And remember, you guys, it's going to go by fast. And if you are this screaming, you know, angry mom running around like a clown with her hair on fire, your kids are going to take their memories of homeschooling and you with them when they leave your house. They really will. And I'm telling you, I have been that mother. I have been her. And it wasn't pleasant for anybody. Several years ago, I mean, this is probably 10 years, maybe 10, 8 or 10 years ago now, one of my kids came to me who had been elected as the delegate. And she said, hey, Mom, the kids have sent me to talk to you. And I was like, oh, that can never be good. That is never good. And I said, oh, okay. You know, what's going on? And she goes, well, we've been talking, and we decided you're not very fun anymore. And I said, right back at ya, because you're not very fun anymore either. And she's like, well, when we started out homeschooling, remember, we were gonna go on field trips, and we were going to take walks, and we were going to read books. And she was right. She was right. I had all these reasons. That's why I write Homeschooling Held Hostage. I had all these reasons for wanting to have more life with my kids. And I was so hijacked by what the world or what some curriculum company told me I should be doing with my kid that all of a sudden we weren't enjoying homeschooling at all. Every day was the same thing. Get up. Get your schoolwork done. Hurry up. You got math and grammar and language and spelling and blah, 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 blah. And that's all we were doing. We were lucky to find time to go to the library. And I my heart just broke. Well, first I was mad. That's usually my, you know. And then I'm one of those people that needs to, like, have the Lord needs to talk to me for a while before I get it. But I was talking to my husband, and he said, man, Heidi, you know, what do you think about that? And I was like, you're not supposed to say that. You're supposed to go, man, those kids are in trouble. They are going to get it, you know. And instead he was like, what do you think about that? And I was like, well, Yep, I probably am not any fun anymore. And it was really the beginning of a turnaround in our homeschool. And it's not that we're not doing school. We're doing tons of school, but we're not doing it in a way that's stressing our family out and stressing our relationships out. Because here's the thing, you guys, it's going to go by stinking fast. It just will. That's a picture of me with my daughter, Savannah, in 1992, and that's her and I in 2012 when I was speaking at a homeschool convention in Europe. And now she's married with a little baby of her own. Like, seriously, just like that. She just got married on me, and I was like, what are you doing? You know? You're launching arrows. Don't get sidetracked. You're homeschooling your kids because you want something different than what the world is offering, so don't make it look like the world. You're not like the world. This is really cool for me. I found this book. I gave my kids a journal. I love the little blank journals that you can find like at Miller Pad and Paper. I love those. And I gave my kids a journal. And I'm just going to read to you. Summer made this. My daughter, Summer, made this when she was 10, I think, or 9. And I'll read to you. For those of you who can't read it, this is what it says. It's my insect guide. Now, she's keeping this journal to give to her kids when she homeschools her own kids. So that's what makes it special. She said, dear kids, I'm just trying to think of Summer talking to her own kids, but now that I have a grandchild, I can sort of see it. All right. Dear kids, I did this when I was 9, and I wanted to learn about insects with you, so we will pick out an insect book and study about them. When we're done, I will take you to get ice cream and have popcorn and a movie. Love, Mom, Summer. See, that's the thing, you guys. It's going to go by fast. And your children are creating right now an idea in their head of what they think education looks like. And they're going to do that from you. And if you can create in them a love for learning and a sure undergirding of who they are, not only who they are in your eyes, that they know that you love them, but also who they are to the Lord, that He loves them, you're going to have so much more rich experiences with them because of that. Because that's what makes homeschooling so amazing. It's not the academics they're going to push your kids into to propel. Some of you were in my last workshop, and I talked about that the child who kept failing algebra and ended up owning the most successful CPA firm in the state of Oregon. This mother was at her wit's end until somebody said, focus on what really matters. Don't let academics come between you and your child. And I had somebody talk to me last week in Greenville when I was speaking in South Carolina, and she said, your emphasis seems to be more on academics or more on relationship than it is on academics. Aren't you worried that your child is not going to get what they need? And the answer is no, I'm not worried anymore because I'm learning as I walk with the Lord that His strength is made perfect in weakness, that His grace is sufficient. And if His grace is really sufficient, you don't need to kill yourself or your child trying to provide them with a Harvard education. If they're supposed to go to Harvard and you do your job, they are going to go to Harvard. And they're going to do it without you being that yelling, screaming, lunatic homeschool mom running around like a lion with hair on fire. They really will. So keep in mind what the end result is. And when you're talking to your children, find out what they think is important. Because they really will have an idea of what they want to study. Every year, and this is something I would like to encourage you to do, especially if you're new, I interview my kids every year at the beginning of the year. I should take a picture, and I'll do that next time. But I ask them the same questions. I ask them, what was your favorite thing about last year? And if they say, I actually write down verbatim what they say. So if they say nothing, I hated it, I write it down, okay? So I'll say, what was your favorite thing about last year? What did you learn the most? What was your least favorite thing? What do you want to be when you grow up? And it's so fun for me to go back and read those, let them look at their journals, because they'll say things like, first they want to be Batman, you know, and then they think they want to be a truck driver, and the next year they might want to be a fireman, and all of a sudden something clicks in, and now they're starting to really see, oh, I'm being trained up for something. God's going to do something with me. Give your kids a vision for what God is doing in them. And so if it's less about the textbooks and more about the textbooks then become a means to an end. You see, they're not the end. Also, just a word about textbooks. One of the mistakes I made early in homeschooling was that I felt like we had to finish every single problem in the math book. And I just want to free you from that right now. Be free. How many of you remember finishing your math book in school all the way to the end? Were you homeschooled? Of course. That kid raises his hand. See? You know what? A lot of these math books, they start in the first 3 months as review of the last year anyway, and I've learned something with my kids. At the end of the year when you're done, you know, if it's April or May and you're the little squashed little, you know, I ain't even done, just be done. Give yourself a break. Start over. Hit the reset button. It's okay to take a break in the middle of the school year. It's okay to take an extended break at Christmas time so that you can refresh your batteries and recharge. It's good for you. And you know what? It's good for your kids. I wish someone had told me that. How many of you have ever seen Diana Waring speak? Have you heard of her or seen her speak? She has a great history curriculum program, and she's a dear friend of mine. And when Jay and I lived in Washington State about 15 years ago, she was at a homeschool conference, and I was sitting right where you're sitting, and she was speaking, and I was listening to her. And when it was over, I raised my hand because I had questions, and she walked up to me, and she said, you know, what's your question? And I was doing a pretty well-known math program, or, you know, like a whole full-on curriculum program with my kids. And I said, you know, I feel like I'm messing my kids up. I feel like I'm messing my kids up. We can't finish our history. We grab her in the language and we're behind them. She just stopped me mid-sentence and she put her hand on my shoulder and she said, woman, be loosed. And I was like, okay. She thinks I'm possessed. This is not good. And she's like, why are you doing this to yourself? Why are you killing yourself with all of this, what are you even doing? And so I showed her my list of stuff I was doing. She was like, whoa, that makes me want to throw up, you know? And she had, at the time, she had three kids. One of her children is now a doctor. One of them's gone into the military, and one of them has her own private practice. And she was like, you know what? Read to your kids. She was the one who really started to set me free. Read to your kids. She's like, oh my goodness, why are you crying? You shouldn't be crying. Like, this isn't okay. And I was like, really? Because I do this every day. I cry every day. And it was just so fun. And we love to tell that story. I just saw her in South Carolina, and she comes, every time she sees me, she says, be loosed, really loud. It's embarrassing. So let your kids know that you love them. Let them know that you want to learn with them, alongside them, and then trust that God's going to do something. But the minute you sense that tension in your heart is racing, and I will talk about scheduling tomorrow. I hope you'll come. I'm doing the Busy Mom's Guide to Daylight tomorrow as one of my workshops. That is great for people who are just trying to figure out how they're going to organize their day. But until you figure that out, give your kids grace and give yourself grace, because a little grace is going to go a long way. I am going to purposely stop a few minutes early to see if anybody has any questions that I can answer. And yes. All right, she's asking if I have any suggestion for including or occupying toddlers while you're trying to homeschool the other kids. And I have lots of experience with that. And I have no suggestions for you at all. No, that's not entirely true. I would say, I think you, at some point with toddlers, you kind of have to go into survival mode. Like years ago when I started homeschooling, videos were the great Satan. And so I just didn't want to tell anybody that I put Elmo in, you know, for my 2-year-old while I was trying to do math. But I finally, one day we were sitting around the homeschool co-op and I was like, you know, they were talking about toddlers. And I said, well, I put Elmo in. And they were like, oh my goodness. I was like, some people started crying, you know, I mean, oh my goodness. I think it's whatever works. Okay. And every year it's something a little bit different. A lot of times I would wait for my kids to take naps. You know, I wait for the baby to take a nap before I would do something that I knew was time intensive. For a couple of years, I had a box of toys that the toddlers could only play with while we were doing school. What I've noticed more than anything, because our youngest is 3, little Sailor is 3, and what she wants to do so badly is school. She is dying to do school with the older kids, and it drives me crazy because she's just a distraction, really. I'm like, Lord, what do I do with this beautiful distraction? And he said, put up with her. So I got colors and books for her, and she sits at the table and colors with us. And the rule is, if she can't sit there quietly and color while I'm trying to do math with the kids, then I put earphones on her and she watches Caillou, which my older kids hate because now she sings the song. That and Frozen. She's singing, you know, do you want to build a snowman all the time? But I just think, you know, I want the kids to feel really loved and really special, even when they're little like that. But if you have to, nap time is a good time. You know, do it whenever you get, I think toddlers are kind of survival mode. So that's a good question. Anybody else have a question? Yes. I don't know if you can speak to this, but just how do you understand your boys that are 5? Do you have any recommendations for Okay, so there's a really good book. I think actually the YWAM booth might have it. There's a book called How to Get Your Child Off the Refrigerator and Into Learning. She was asking, what do you do with a child who just can't sit still, has so much energy? I have literally had my kids, like if my kids are bouncing off the walls, I would literally make them run laps around the house. The neighbors, I'm sure, think I'm crazy, but I'll just be like, hey, kids, 5 minutes, three laps, and they'll run laps around the house. Have them burn off their energy. You know, if they're fidgeting and can't handle it, take a break. I mean, the trampoline is a great idea. You know, we had at one point a little mini tramp in our house, and I had one kid who would do their math facts while bouncing on the mini tramp. So again, but that's a great one. How to Get Your Kid Off the Refrigerator and Into Learning is really good. And talking to other moms who have kids like that online is really good too. How many minutes do I have left? Five? Is it 5 minutes? Okay, I'll take one more question. Anybody have a question? Yes. Okay, I can't hear you. One more time. Yeah. Well, I don't know. He's asking me what it's like to be a dad from the outside looking in, but I don't know because I'm not a dad. In my experience, I can tell you what my husband would say. And I think one of the biggest things for moms in homeschooling is needing to know that the dad is interested. Like, your wife's going to want to know that it matters to you what's happening. My biggest advice to dad is don't put pressure on your wife. I mean, the worst thing that you can do is say, you're not doing enough. The worst thing you can do is start critiquing her homeschooling. And I talk to so many moms who are so stressed out because they need support from their husband. So the best thing that Jay does for me is to come in and just and be excited about what the kids are learning. Like, he'll ask them, what are you learning in school, or what are you guys reading? And of course they want to talk about that. So I think just that active, that being interested. And there are other things that you can do. Like, my husband is he's leading worship here. He's a guitar player, and he has lots of, he has a passion for mechanics. And so he's taught our boys how to rebuild engines and things like that. They get credit for that in school. So anything that you can do to be involved in something that you find that you're passionate about, you guys would be amazed at what you can give your kids credit for in school, especially as they get older. Those are all life skills. But the biggest thing, I think, is that you recognize that you're doing it as a team, that when dad comes home from work, moms don't, you know, jump on him and start crying, okay? Give him a little time to decompress, unless, you know, you need to make the target run that we talked about earlier. But just it's a team effort. And Jay has said for many, many years that the best thing he's done for me, and this is really true, is just be my biggest cheerleader. Like I said this morning, he's the guy who, you know, Heidi, he always says this to me, Heidi, 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 ordinary women would have died today, but you are doing awesome. And that's really all I need, that and a frozen pizza. And I'm good to go for the next day. That's a good, you should swing by. Jay, my husband, by the way, is working at the Busy Moms booth. So he's amazing, and you can talk to him. He's awesome. I think that's all the time I have. So, right? I'm done. Thanks for listening, you guys. You can do it.